Welcome to Public Policy This Week, a well-rounded weekly discussion of policy issues that frame today's American experience.
Good morning. It's Friday, January 13th, and you've joined us for Public Policy This Week here on KYMN Radio.
Public Policy This Week is dedicated to the honest and open discussion of public policy issues. Each week we take a look at a specific policy subject, and we have guests on the show that are experts in their fields. I'm Joe Moravcik. Partnering with me today is Rich Larson. We have two guests joining us in the studio this morning. First, Derek Myers, co-owner of Imminent Brewing, located in downtown Northfield at Division and 6th Streets. Also with us is Mark Schiller, co-owner of Loon Liquors, which is located on Armstrong Road on the southwest side of Northfield. We're going to talk with Derek and Mark about their local business operations and also about how Minnesota laws affect the craft brewery and the craft spirit industries. After all, we do have to talk about some policy. We just can't hang out in a distillery and in a brewery this morning.
Oh, we could try. Derek Myers is originally from Spearfish, South Dakota. He has a BA from South Dakota State University in English and Political Science. He wants us to also point out that South Dakota State University is the newly crowned subdivision national championship in football.
Go Jacks.
Go Jack Rabbits.
Beat their arch rival, too, right? North Dakota State.
Did you really? I didn't realize that. Nice. And anyway, you also, Derek also has an MA in political science from Colorado State University. He and his wife, Laura, opened the doors to Imminent Brewing in the early summer of 2017. Imminent Brewing is a tap room focused on craft brewery. Derek and Laura sell most of their beer as pints right across the bar for on-site consumption. There are at least 15 craft brews on tap with names like Motorpool Pilsner, Cannon River Pale Ale, Raven's Nest Stout, which is actually a very, very good stout. Quick in the Red, Fat Cat Saison, Scooby Dunkel, and the incredibly famous Dragon Squirrel IPA. Now, in interest of transparency, I must say, I am still employed by Imminent Brewing. I have been for 5 years. I booked the music there, and I'm there quite a bit. Just not behind the bar anymore. At Imminent, there are local food trucks on site, there are game nights, and there is live music. It is a community gathering spot over craft beers. The other thing I want to say, I'm the guy that coined the phrase Northfield's living room. Derek Myers, welcome to Public Policy This Week.
Thank you guys for having me.
Mark Schiller is from Northfield. He has a BA from the University of Minnesota in entrepreneurship and marketing. He partnered with a high school friend, Simeon, to create Loon Liquors. This is their 12th year in business. Mark and Simeon craft organic spirits completely from scratch, sourcing 95% of their raw ingredients from local farms. They have a full portfolio of craft spirits, including vodka, gin, whiskey, rum, liqueurs, aquavit, and more. They operate a walk-in cocktail room at the distillery. During our Minnesota winters, guests can enjoy cocktails set by wood-fire stoves and spring through fall barbecue with cocktails in their cocktail garden. Loon Liquors, like Imminent, is a gathering destination, and Loon Liquor spirits are distributed to over 400 locations throughout Minnesota. Additionally, Mark has been the president of the Minnesota Distillers Guild for the last 4 years. His primary role as president of the Guild is to promote and grow the Minnesota craft spirits industry through legislation and events and the Minnesota Distillers Passport, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. Mark, welcome to Public Policy This Week.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Gentlemen, let's get into our discussion. Derek, the idea for your own brewery had its origins in Colorado when you were in Fort Collins working on a master's degree. And it was in California where Laura was working on a master's degree that you started some home brewing. Tell us a little bit about your experiences and influences in Colorado and California that eventually leads to Imminent Brewing.
Sure. So Colorado in some ways, well, in California both, I would say were the birthplaces of this kind of craft brewing revolution. You have Anchor Steam in San Francisco, and you've got breweries like New Belgium and Odell's in Colorado. We were in Colorado first, and that was kind of where we got really inspired by what what New Belgium, especially, and Odell's were doing in those towns. There's also smaller local breweries like Coopersmith's, which is more kind of what we do. But the way that New Belgium engaged with the community and created a whole culture around beer, around bikes, was just kind of amazing to us. Like the generosity they had and the way they ran their business really inspired us. The things they did for environmental issues and things that they cared about was just kind of like, wow, this is like a whole new way to operate a business that we hadn't really considered. And the beer was just amazing, mm-hmm. right? We'd go to these places and just kind of be blown away by what they were doing. It was so different than a Coors or Miller or whatever else you could get at the time. So
it doesn't work if the beer isn't great.
Right, exactly. You got to have something to kind of get around. Same thing out in California. That's kind of when we started brewing. I think we were also just inspired by the variety of ingredients you could get out there, mm-hmm. right? So, like, you can grow anything in California. So people were just putting all kinds of crazy stuff in beer, and it was super fun. And the way they engaged with our local producers was super neat. We had a stout out there where they used Drake's Bay oysters in it, you know? Just, like, bizarre, but it was fun.
Who would think?
Oyster. Yeah, right. So without being too long-winded, it was kind of those things. And then I would say also like the wine scene out there, the way that like a whole tourism industry mm-hmm. kind of developed in Napa and yeah. Sonoma, the Russian River. You start seeing what these industries could do for a community, and it was just really inspiring. We're like, wow, we want to be part of this. Mm. So that's how it started.
Mark, you studied entrepreneurship and marketing in college, so business was on your mind from a young age. And while in college, you sample your friend Simeon's creations, including a coffee liqueur. You tell him that you want to bring that liqueur to market. Is this the beginning of Loon Liquors?
Yeah, in a nutshell, it definitely is. Yeah, Simeon, great friend, and also Northfield High School graduate. We met in Miss Muha's English class.
Ellen Muha is a great lady, by the way.
Oh, my God. Yeah, some of the best, for sure. Yeah, and so we met up in English class, kept through friends through college, and he started making this coffee liqueur in college just for his personal consumption and giving away to friends. And then he had a big white Russian party in Northfield, and I was at said white Russian party. There may have been some Menards buckets involved in that. And then, yeah, it was just amazing flavor. It was like, wow, cookie that was bought from the store, cookie that like somebody from your family makes, you know, completely from scratch. And so loved it. And then we kind of went into, okay, well, let's look to sell this. You know, Simeon, you make it, you know, I'll help sell it and market it and put the business plan together. Talked to the state of Minnesota, and they said, oh, well, the permit for doing this is $30,000 a year as your fee. Thank you very much. But if this whole Surly bill passes that allows breweries to sell their own beer, very novel idea in 2011, then they also create a provision that's called the micro distillery clause. So they create the classification of micro distillery. So you have brewery, microbrewery, distillery, micro distillery at different limits. Hmm. And then your permit, if you produce under a certain amount, is only $1,000 a year. So, wow, this is great. So we started looking at the other states that did this. You know, Wisconsin did it about four or six years before Minnesota. And then they started flourishing in all these small distilleries. So I told that out to Simeon, hey, the laws are going to change here. And he said, well, if it's the same permit as to mix liquor as to make liquor, like, we can make liquor. We can make a vodka. We can make a gin. We can make a whiskey. We can make a rum. It was great. You figure out how to do that, and then I'll help, you know, on the marketing and finance side. So, yeah, we started going down this road in 2011, and then in 2014, at the very beginning, more 2013, we created Southern Minnesota's first micro distillery, so first legal distillery in Southern Minnesota in about 100 years. Hmm. And then yeah, we just started getting into all kinds of spirits since then. And then also got a huge shout out to Derek and Laura for allowing us to also get a cocktail room license. So we've been operating a cocktail room within our distillery for 7 years, 8 years. I lose time now. Time is, yeah, something else. Yeah.
That's great. Mark and Derek, I was born in Milwaukee, and so are my daughters. Milwaukee is a great underrated city, and growing up, depending on what part of the city you were in, you could smell chocolate from the Ambrosia plant, or smoked sausages from Clements or Usinger's, or bacon from Cudahy, or yeast from North Star. And of course, you could smell the brewing industry, yeast, barley, the grains that Schlitz, Pabst, and Miller, later Miller Coors, all used. Both of you guys use wonderful fresh ingredients in your beers and spirits. Tell us where you get your inspiration for the ingredients you use, what the testing process is like for a new beer or spirit, and what it's like in the brewery or distillery creating craft beers and craft spirits. Does the brewery smell like yeast and grains and the distillery fruits? And what is it like to have customers enjoy the products that you create? Take us into the brewery or the distillery. Mark, why don't you go ahead? Derek, I'm going to ask you the same question in a minute.
Great. Yeah, so there are a bunch of fun smells out at the distillery for sure. Yeah, Milwaukee's a magical place. But yeah, and ours, you know, we're using wheat and barley 50-50. Unlike most American distilleries use predominantly corn or ethanol. They'll get it from an ethanol plant. We make 100% from scratch. So you get a lot of the raw wheat and barley mashing, which is a little bit like malt oatmeal, you know, a teeny bit, but in like a craft organic, like yummy, super yummy flavor. And then through the fermentation, you get some fun orchard fruit notes, and some breadiness a little bit in the air. And then when Simeon is making all kinds of fun spirits with the gin and akavit with fresh dill, you know, from Open Hands Farm, you know, all those kind of fun flavors and botanicals stream through the air. And then, of course, when our amazing cocktail room lead Ashlyn is making some fun simple syrups for the bar, you know, there is something magical about freshly juicing raspberries, you know, or starting to warm up some fireside orchard cider, you know, with some fun baking spices in the air. So that's a lot of it. And then on the actual process, you know, that's all coming from Simeon. You know, he gets to think about what spirits that he loves, what people around town, around our area love, and then starts going down the path of, okay, you know, can we do this? Can we do this right? And when we get to the end, you know, how delighted can we make our customer? Mm-hmm. And so some of our spirits we can make a little bit on the short end side, you know, a couple of months, you know, on that side. And then, you know, with our rye whiskey that we've launched this last year, we just cracked a couple of barrels. You know, we did that 4 years ago, which seems like forever, but during the polar vortex and with one of our barrels. And that's been sitting there, you know, for a while and freshly cracking it out. And then also that flavor changes over time. So Simeon gets to choose, okay, it's ready. You know, we're ready to crack this open and love it. But yeah, it's mostly just a fun experiment of just trying out tons of different things and see what works and what doesn't work. And we've got a lot that it's in the barrels that's kind of secretive that, you know, maybe we'll announce it hopefully this year, probably around what we've done in the last year with our peated whiskey and really becoming one out of about 15 distilleries in the world that do that. And yeah, just starting with the ingredients from our backyard and seeing where we can get.
Derek, take us into the brewery.
Yeah. Similar, less botanicals, more hops for sure. So we got a lot more, pine and citrus kind of floating through the air from the hops that we use, resin kind of notes. You know, as far as like how we come about figuring out beers. We have a meeting every week between Laura and I, our taproom manager Steven, and then Justin, our head brewer, and Jared, our assistant brewer and kind of general operations guy. So we all sit down, talk about like what's coming, what we'd like to see, what beers we might be interested in. It's a lot of seasonality in the brewing industry.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. you know, right now it's cold out. We got a lot of dark beers, a lot of boozy beers. There's not a lot of things growing, so we're not using too many local ingredients right now. But as soon as spring and summer comes around, we start getting more fruity, more sour beers. We use kind of as many local fruits as we can. We've used blueberries from Little Hill. We've used raspberries from Lawrence's, rhubarb from Spring Wind Farm. We throw honey in from Homestead Apiaries. We use basil from Waxwing Farm and that honey basil beer. So we try to like tie into those local ingredients where we can. And we use some local hops too. There's a couple of hop places around. Hanopy Ranch and Civil Sass Hops are the ones that we kind of reach out to. There's a little bit of testing that does happen. You mentioned kind of like, how do you test out things?
Right.
Because our equipment is so big, it's kind of like you just got to commit to it most of the time. And Justin and Jared are good enough that they know what's going to come out of there.
Okay.
But we do have a small fermenter, a one-barrel fermenter, and sometimes after brewing a batch, so our normal equipment puts out 10 barrels of beer. It's 330 gallons, mm-hmm. basically, 310 gallons. One barrel is going to be 31 gallons, so sometimes we'll pull off a little bit of wort and pitch a different yeast or throw some different hops in it or put some kind of fruit or something in a beer that we normally wouldn't do, see how it tastes, and then we might size it up next time. So that's kind of the stuff. That's how the process goes.
Can you talk about your barrel-aged beers a little bit?
Sure. Please? Yeah, and maybe someday they'll be aged in Loon Liquors barrels.
Yeah.
We'll see.
That's what we're all hoping for.
Yeah.
We take our time with that. But yeah, you guys have claimed it since day one. You know, it's like, when can we get your barrel? You're the first ones to call it, so you get it.
I think there'll be plenty to go around someday. Right?
Someday,
there'll be plenty to go around.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right now we got a beer on that's a barrel-aged Russian Imperial Stout. It's called the Mash Machine. We got our barrels from Rock Filter Distillery down in Spring Grove, Minnesota. They're smaller barrels. What do you guys use? Using big barrels?
We're using kind of all over the board. Yeah. So we've got some 15s that we've put our our single malt and our peated in. And then for our 30s, we're at rye whiskey.
15-gallon, 30-gallon?
15-gallon. Yeah, sorry. Yep, 15-gallon. Yeah. Yep, a little bit smaller. And then we have 30s that we have rye whiskey in. Mm-hmm. And then we even have a couple of 50s that we got from, shout out to Keepsake, Nate out there, he had a batch that he wasn't 100%, you know, perfect with. And, you know, you got to love Nate. He's a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And so he brewed up some cider that didn't work out 100%. And so we distilled it and we made some apple brandy. Nice. And so we got, just with a couple of 50s, we got some apple brandy.
That's cool.
Oh, that one might be a long time. Don't hold your breath on that. Those barrels.
and just so we're clear, you're talking about Keepsake Cidery and Nate Waters, who's the proprietor and owner outside of Dundas, Minnesota.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. But just to like follow up, we have 15-gallon barrels, so we kind of run maybe three beers through them at the most. First batch kind of needs to sit for a few weeks. The barrels are really fresh. There's a lot of whiskey character, a lot of wood character in them. So we'll empty those, then we fill it up. Now we got a strong ale in there, an American strong ale. Those will probably sit a little longer because it's going to take a little bit more time for the flavors to come out of those barrels.
It's just it's such a fascinating process. Yeah. As a bourbon guy, it's a fascinating just to. I mean, you can't watch it, but for the beer to sort of suck those characters into the, it's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Derek, you give great credit to Laura, your wife and business partner, for her planning leading up to the opening of Eminent Brewing. Now you both co-own the business and work the business, and it isn't just brewing that goes on there, the romance of brewing. What are the day-to-day operations like for you and your staff at the brewery?
Yeah. We were kind of joking about this before the show, but the romance of brewing is really funny because it's mostly clean. It's mostly what's happening. Just keeping everything really, really clean because you don't want any kind of bacteria to get into the fermentation and throw any off flavors into those beers. Luckily, we've gotten away from the cleaning a little bit. Justin and Jared kind of take care of that back of house stuff for us. You know, their week, they're kind of brewing about once a week. And on the other days, they're kegging, cleaning tanks, cleaning the floors, buying ingredients, doing recipe formulation, whatever else needs to happen back there. Cleaning our tap lines, you know, we make sure that, like, the delivery system of the beer is really important, too. We don't want anything bad happening there. For me, you know, I'm doing a lot more of kind of the back of house stuff. I'm taking care of the books. I'm doing a little bit of distribution. I'm fixing whatever happens to be broken that week. I'm kind of the handyman around the shop. A lot of long-term planning, too, trying to figure out what's next. I do the payroll. I bartend when I need to, you know. Just jump in there. It's kind of like all hands on deck sometimes. A lot of event planning, private events, community events, things like that. Laura's doing like HR, social media, mug club stuff, communications with our wider audience. She's really big into community organization as well. And then, luckily, we have Steven now, who's kind of running the tap room. He's scheduling our employees, figuring out what needs to happen, so that place is running great. Yeah. Also cleaning a lot, you know. So that's kind of what we're up to over there.
Mark, similar question. How do you and Simeon divide up your roles at Loon Liquors?
Yeah, just echoing a lot of what Derek said on just, you know, a lot of cleaning, you know, all of us all the time. But yeah, mostly it's really fun. You know, we have such different minds, you know, I'm definitely more numbers driven, more on the business side of things, working a lot with the retailers. Yeah. And then Simeon's definitely other side of the brain, just creative, mad scientist, rolling in the apothecary, you know, looking for new flavors, like making sure all of our batches are just like primo. And so, but I help out a lot on the production. I like to call myself the assistant distiller. So I help out most of the week down in Northfield here, helping more with the fermentation side a bit. Kind of Simeon and I are like about 50-50 right now with that. And then I help out on the stripping runs, what's called the first distillation. And then when it gets to the point that it needs to be finished, multiple distillations and the blending, that's when Simeon takes, you know, takes the rein, and that's 100%. I don't even go near that, you know, when he's going on the creative side. And then while he's doing that, I'll meet out with our fantastic retail partners, fantastic distributor, and then meet out with them, try to get as many sales and business as we can. And then back at the spot, you know, we both kind of really look through all the details about our expansion, business plan, product offerings, marketing. You know, we all work together hand in hand. Simi and I roll through, scrutinize every single little detail of it, and then just random activities kind of help enable Ashlyn and the team to make the best possible cocktail room experience that we can.
Mark, in your introduction this morning, a Minnesota distiller's passport was mentioned in your bio. What is that passport? How does it benefit distilleries? Did I see a Minnesota distiller's passport at the state fair?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's great. You're bringing up this fun opportunity for us. So I took the reins 4 years ago on the Distillers Guild, and we were looking at what are the opportunities to generally grow us as an industry, right? And you come up on finances, right? Like, how do we finance all of our different activities? And we looked at this passport and looked at, you know, the breweries have been so successful with all their different... There's a pub pass and, a hops passport, and there's one for dogs even. So it's, you know, breweries that specialize in dogs, right? The pup pass? I don't know what they call it. What do they call that, Derek?
It is the sidewalk dog.
Sidewalk dog. There we go. So we're looking at the proliferation of that and how many, you know, people really enjoyed it, and it encouraged people to go out and try different breweries, right, all over the state. And we looked at that and we said, this is a great opportunity. And so... We got our 20 different distilleries at the time. They all put in deals, buy one, get one free drink, you know, a free tour and a tasting, percentage off of merch, all these different deals. And we launched it at the Minnesota State Fair. That's predominantly where we do it. We have a teeny bit of sales in a couple of distilleries, but you basically get deals across the state, and during the fair they're typically like $10, and so you make your money back like right away or like the next visit and two visits. We had like a 3 for $20, you know, 4 for $25, 4 for $30, something like that. But we were able to raise just about $30,000 to $40,000 off of those passports each year. So from what I'm talking about with our other, you know, Simi and I went out to these national conferences, and at one point we had more money in our bank than the Colorado and California Distillers Guilds combined. And it was like, whoa, okay, this is awesome. Because, okay, A, we're making money off of it. B, we're printing it in the state, you know. So we're, you know, actually the printing cost like goes right into the state. And we're benefiting all these different, you know, distilleries. I mean, we get tons of passports rolling through. And again, it's to encourage people to go out and try our stuff. Again, we encourage everybody to try our things, but also go out to different distilleries to see what the different differences are. Mm-hmm. Because there are massive differences between the breweries, massive differences between the distilleries, and massive differences between each spirit. So that's been a super successful program. And then we leverage that money that we raise that we put into lobbying. And then we also put into different events. We're looking at hopefully a spring event this year, and hopefully a fall event. We haven't done an event in like 3 years, 4 years, but it'll hopefully be one of the, you know, it's really the predominant go out to this event, try all these different distilleries at once. So be on the hunt for that.
Derek, an objective for Eminent Brewing is not only great craft beer, but also for the tap room to be a welcoming, energetic, friendly, and community-oriented gathering space. What do you do to make that happen?
Yeah, it's mostly the dogs, I think. I mean, going back to Mark here. We are a dog-friendly brewery, so like, I'll just expand on that a little bit. We just try to be friendly for everyone. Yep. Like, we're really family-friendly. We do things like lots of music. We have these game nights that Mrs. Moxie puts on. We've got a mug club, so if you were just... want to like feel like you're really part of what we're doing, you can get a mug and you get to drink out of this cool thing, and it's a little extra beer in there every time you buy a pint. It's a super fun program. We try to engage with the community, with local charities, host events for them that raise money. And a lot of it's just like, Rich, we have these amazing people working for us, right? So
there's a reason I don't work.
Our staff is just great. They're just warm, friendly. They make you feel welcome. But I think like along with all this, then like if we're trying to create this space, like very quickly when we started having dogs in, we realized like, oh, there's a list of rules we need to establish, right? You don't want to be in a space where there's a aggressive dog barking at you constantly while you're trying to drink a beer. So we've kind of established some rules for how you be in a space that's supposed to be welcoming for everyone too. And we post them on our walls, and we kind of say like, hey, if you're going to be a jerk, if you're going to be racist or sexist, if you're going to make other people feel uncomfortable in this space, you're not welcome anymore.
Then you get to talk to the biggest guy behind the bar.
Well, yeah. So we've really, you know, tried to cultivate that atmosphere in a very intentional way. And just make everybody kind of aware of that's kind of what's expected, so that we can all enjoy this space together. And then I'll just like add to that, we also try to serve responsibly, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's just a big part of like what I think everybody in the craft like drinks industry, whether it's spirits, wine.
Mark beer. Is nodding his head pretty much off of his neck. Even.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
My God. Yeah.
You know, like, this is a different culture. You're here to enjoy these flavors. You're not here to get blitzed.
Right.
So we're doing something a lot different than what your regular dive bar is doing. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
For our listeners, you're listening to Public Policy This Week on KYMN Radio in beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. My name is Rich Larson alongside Joe Moravchik. We are talking with Derek Myers of Imminent Brewing and Mark Schiller of Loon Liquors about their respective business operations and the Minnesota laws that affect the craft brewery and craft spirit industries.
Rich, we got to get into some policy. We can't just... talk about
like you tried to point out at the beginning of the show, this is a policy show, so yeah. You know, let's get into it.
Not just great spirits and beer here, so.
Okay guys, Minnesota changed its laws in 2011 that allowed for an establishment to sell the beer it makes and operate a tap room. 12 years later, Minnesota is now home to approximately 200, maybe more, craft breweries, brew pubs, microbreweries, whatever label we want to put on them. That same bill, the Surly bill, decreased the price of market, like just what you were talking about, the price of a permit for a commercial distillery from $30,000 to $1,000. Or $1,100, I guess, if we're getting technical about it. Mm-hmm. And in 2014, a law was passed allowing craft distilleries to operate cocktail rooms out of their facilities. Today, there are an estimated 38 craft distilleries in the state of Minnesota. The law changes were opposed by the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association and its assorted members for fear that the craft breweries and distilleries would endanger the integrity of the traditional manufacturing, distribution, retail system. We're going to talk about the what do they call it, the three-part system. Craft distilleries still, if they do want to market their products, they have to go through traditional distribution. This leaves a number of questions, right? Guys, how important is distribution specifically to your business models? If you could only sell the products that you make in your facility, if you could only sell those products in your tap room or in your cocktail room, could you survive?
You want to go first? Because we're going to have different answers.
Yeah, go for it, Derek.
You want me to go? Okay.
Yeah.
I think we could, yeah, okay. Definitely. Like, distribution is a very small part of what we currently do. Mm-hmm. You can find our beer at the Oli store, at Reunion, at the movie theater, occasionally a few other places around town.
I know a lot of people that really appreciate the fact that you can get a beer, an Imminent beer at the movie theater, by
yeah,
the way.
That's super fun, isn't it? Yeah, I kind of dig that one. But it's not what we do. Mostly we sell pints across the bar. We sell a little bit of beer to go. But I will say that, like, part of the laws that I think we're going to talk about later in some ways hamper us from growing into a brewery that would want to do more distribution, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we could probably make it just on our taproom.
Before I turn this question over to Mark, you do want to distribute, though, right? I mean,
yeah,
you want to sell outside of the brewery.
Yeah, we're starting to look a little bit harder at that, and I would even say, you know, this is just funny how life works, but going into 2020, right, we mm-hmm. started having a few accounts up in the yep. Southern Metro. Yep. We were at First Draft Tap House. We were at Black Sheep, the pizza place, the coal-fired pizza place. Yep. We were starting to, like, get a little bit wider. And then the pandemic hit, and right. tap beer was not a thing anymore.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. And, right. and that's all we do right now is tap beer. We're not okay. we're not canning anything.
Okay. So, all right. Mark, it's a different story with Loon, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. When we started our business, you couldn't have a cocktail room. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't sell a bottle. You couldn't sell a drink. You, I think you could only do 15 milliliters or something like that of a sample per person per day. So that's also why we picked our very awkward location that we're going to get into, you know, later, I'm sure, in the discussion. But we picked this random warehouse, you know, Rebound and Born to Run Enterprises and everybody, Steve Schmidt and crew, they have been fantastic landlords and lovely working out there and still. But when we started, it was all about distribution, 100%. And now that we've added the cocktail room, it kind of warps from year to year a little bit, where the cocktail room's super successful, distribution lags just a little bit for reasons, you know, many beyond our control, and then it'll flip back. But when you look at the opportunity that we have in front of us, from our perspective, it's definitely on the distribution side is the way to best grow, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, okay? Because we'll again get into the discussion later, but that might flip dramatically back towards the other way, where we want to stress on site, because that's where people engage with your brand, right? Mm-hmm. When you see your bottle out on a liquor store shelf, you don't know how does that brand actually feel, vibe, because then you go in there and you're like, oh, wow, you know, I can really feel the craft. I can feel how much they care for their ingredients, that kind of thing. And if we weren't allowed to distribute, yeah, we would probably close up shop.
Yeah,
for okay. sure.
All right. Just for our guests, I'm going to combine these next two questions that I had laid out to you here. There are a number of rules, and exceptions, regarding the amount of product you guys, produce and sell. And it's really to me, it sounds like there's several different, types of licenses that govern what you sell. And this idea of self-distribution works into that. Self-distributing is something that craft breweries like Imminent can do, but craft distilleries cannot, nor can brew pubs. Mm-hmm. How is it beneficial to Imminent that you can self-distribute? Is it something that Loon would like to do? And in your estimation here, what are the policy changes that should happen with regards to self-distributing? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the crux of this whole conversation.
Sure. Yeah, so we basically can sell our beer directly to a liquor store, a restaurant, a bar. I don't need to go to College City or another distributor to buy my product and then sell it to the liquor store or the mm-hmm. restaurant. That's nice, you know? I get a little more margin off of my product for that.
Right, right.
It also means that's labor and time and a vehicle and whatever else that goes into it. So the self-distribution model is really good for small breweries that just want to get out there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Where we get hampered, I think, is like, if I'm not able to sell these products out of my own tap room that I'm trying to sell to a liquor store, why would I start investing in the equipment to make those products? Right. And I'm specifically talking about cans, bottles here.
Mm-hmm.
I can only sell a growler or a howler until recently out of my tap room, mm-hmm. which is just weird. Now we can sell these cans out mm-hmm. of our tap room, but there's limits on it. It's like, here, we're going to let you do this, but you know, we don't want you to be too successful. It's kind of silly. Anyways, I'll stop at that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Self-distribution is an interesting one. Yeah, as we kind of get into policies, I'm going to call it out. You know, the MLBA, you know, was called out a bit ago. And, you know, with the quote-unquote any kind of opposition, I want to call it out right out that we love the MLBA, the MMBA, you know, the Teamsters, the distributors. You know, there are biggest allies across the board when it just comes to business, right? Sure, so sure. That it's like, you know, we love Northfield Muni, and Brian Wood's doing an amazing job, and they're succeeding, and same with, you know, Firehouse and MGM and Cub Foods, Total Wine, Hy-Vee, and all of our different retailers. You know, we love them and love the model that it hinges on. In terms of self-distribution, that's not something that we're interested in, just because, you know, yeah, we're at 400 locations, and to Derek's point, it's like, yeah, you gotta have a van, you know, or a car. With distilling, you could probably get away with a car. With brewing, you can't. Just with the kegs versus, you know, a bottle of liquor kind of a thing, or a case of liquor, right? But yeah, it's dependent upon people and transportation and that kind of thing. Whereas, like, you look at, like, yeah, we'd much rather sell a pallet of liquor than a case of liquor, multiple pallets of liquor, hopefully.
Right. Just driving around to 200 locations would be insane, right?
Oh, yeah. And also, yeah, the driving component, but also the logistics of invoicing and then following up on the invoicing. Yeah. The other thing that's a policy in the state of Minnesota is if you're a retailer and you do not pay your distribution bills from, you know, whomever, if you don't pay College City, I'm picking on College City, sorry, but, you know, other distributors, they have to blacklist you. So they put your name up on a Minnesota website. And if you, as a different distributor or a brewery, you know, distribute to that account, that account actually gets screwed over, and the person bringing over the liquor or beer gets a penalty as well.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really interesting, right? Like, think about any other business that's out there that if you're selling to somebody, right, and you're on a blacklist, you know, that customer's on a blacklist, you get fined, right? It's really interesting, right? Yeah, it makes sure you pay your beer bill, you know, or your liquor bill.
Okay, so last year, 2022, the state made some major changes to the laws governing craft breweries and distilleries, and I'm assuming those laws also affected wineries and cideries. Cap on growler sales, which had been a big controversial thing in the state, was removed for most breweries, and the state is now allowing for breweries to sell their products from the taproom, Derek, as you were just saying, in four packs and six packs of cans. The limit on bottle sales for distilleries was doubled. Derek, how did this law change affect Imminent Brewing?
Yeah, so it hasn't yet,
right?
So the deal with four packs and six packs, it's really any size. You can sell any size of container. You just can't sell more than 128 ounces to any one person in a day. So it's 2 4 packs of 16 ounce cans. Think about it that way. That's the best way to kind of wrap your head around it.
How big is a growler?
A growler is 64 ounces.
So you can't sell someone more than two growlers?
Growlers and howlers are exempt from these limits.
Okay.
Okay. So it gets really muddy really quickly. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of nuance that just, in my opinion, doesn't need to be there. Just let us sell beer the way we want to sell beer, right? That's kind of where we're at. We are looking at beginning to sell some four packs out of our tap room. It'll probably start off really small. We just had to renew our liquor license with the city, and we did put that in there as we'd like to hold that license. So I think, is that April or May that license would come through? That's kind of when we might start doing that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, it's like, if someone wants 3 4 packs of beer, I got to tell them to take a hike. It's kind of funny. But We're going to give it, probably going to give it a shot. Again, there's some equipment that we need to buy. It's kind of risky, but we'll see what happens.
All right. So then, Mark, according to the Minnesota Craft Distillers Guild website, which I'm sure you're familiar with, even with the law passed last year, Minnesota still has one of the strictest limits on bottle sales in the country. Distilleries are allowed to sell one bottle, which equates to 750 milliliters per person per day. We are not here to figure out why that limit exists. Okay, this is a political question, and this is a policy show. But the policy is a mystery to somebody like me. The website talks about raising the limit to 4.5 liters, which would be one case per person per day, even though there are 20-plus states in the country that don't limit bottle sales at all. So then what would it mean to Minnesota distillers if the bottle sales limits were raised and to make it, you know, let's bring it home, right? What would it mean to Loon Liquors?
Yeah, the change that we were able to make in legislation last year, which is a really great step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
We're now able to sell a quote-unquote big adult-sized bottle instead of like the little, actually, some people have called them Barbie bottles in the past, but 375 milliliter, one per person per day. That was the law. Now it's either one 750 mil or 1.125 liters up to. So you can sell a couple of 375 milliliters or a couple more of 200 milliliters. But anyways, regardless, if we have somebody that comes into town from out of state, say Wisconsin, maybe comes from River Falls over, right? And then, you know, we can't sell them a couple of big bottles to take back to Wisconsin, right? Yeah. If you have somebody in Northfield that goes out to River Falls and goes to a said destination distillery out there, you could fill your entire car full of liquor, okay, and then come back, right? That's totally unfair, and it totally doesn't make a lot of sense, right? So we got to kind of look at some kind of balance between, you know, and again, partnership with other folks within the industry to understand how can we start lifting these laws. I mean, if you look way back, you know, George Washington owned a distillery, okay, Mount Vernon, right? I'm sure they weren't regulated very heavily, right? Then you have Abraham Lincoln that owned a general store that was selling whiskey by the barrel, okay? And now look at where we're at today, right? It's gone very, not saying we should go that route, okay? Not calling that out, right? Totally abolitionist, but you need to look at, you know, what are the laws that make sense and how, you know, to Derek's point, how can we grow the small distilleries, the small breweries, small cideries, small wineries, so that we can grow as an industry and grow the market share and really start looking like Oregon and California and other places where the vast majority, you know, of a lot of things is supporting the local businesses and the local businesses that those local businesses support as well.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So to belabor the point a little bit, I want to come back to a question that I asked you earlier. In your estimation, what are the policies that need to change in order for you guys to be as successful as you could possibly be in the state of Minnesota?
Yeah, well, I would like to see these limits done away with, first of all. And I'd just like to echo Mark a little bit. We're talking about putting limits on very local businesses, and as I was saying earlier, very responsible businesses. Mm-hmm. We are trying to do this right, and we've been trying to do this right for a long time, and there should be some kind of acknowledgement, I think, of the way these businesses have been running across the state. We're not going to sell ridiculous amounts of liquor to people to get them drunk or to underage folks. These businesses are your local community businesses. I'll just add one more thing to this. That is, I would love to be able to sell the products of the people that are also in this industry. So I would love to be able to sell some wine from Cannon River Winery and some cider from You know, Keepsake Cidery, my friend Nate just down the street. There are people that would love to hang out in my space that are not beer drinkers.
Yes.
But they might love a glass of cider. I don't know if I'd need to sell whiskey, but man, I would love to do that too. You know, if I could have a really nice whiskey behind the bar, that would be fantastic. You know, something to sip on while you're listening to some jazz. That sounds great. And why we can't do that is also kind of a mystery to me. Yeah. So yeah, it's a weird one.
Mr. Schiller.
Yeah, definitely the one of the biggest policy pieces that that holds back distillers is being able to sell more on site. You know, we moved, you know, we doubled, but we doubled from barely nothing to, I think we went from like fourth to fifth worst in the country, you know? So it wasn't a big jump, you know? Right. So there's a lot to do there. The other thing, what's very interesting kind of going on nationally is USPS, the post office, is looking to get their liquor license. That's very interesting, you know, on a federal scale. And then also direct consumer shipping out of state, I think, is a really great opportunity. So say you have somebody from Northfield or even a college student, right, that went to college here, St. Olaf, Carleton, came in, had a really great experience out at our spot, and then they move out of state, right? They go back to New York. They go, you know, either back to a different state, or they, you know, decide to set root in different state, even though we want to keep them in Northfield and we love them and thank you for spending all of your time and money here. But if they really wanted something, right, and they wanted to buy it off of our website and we could ship it out to California or New York or wherever, right, then who should be opposed to that in Minnesota? Hopefully no one, okay? Because, you know, it doesn't impact their business, and it also just helps us grow. And so I think that's a massive opportunity. And as we see more of the proliferation of online sales, I think you're going to see more and more policy and information kind of going along that end, right? Okay. It's a huge opportunity. And then also, you know, thank goodness we got away from the tariffs and other things that were in other countries that were, you know, there's a tax on bourbon out in, you know, the UK for a minute, and that was not good, right? I'm glad we're not going back there, you know.
Yeah. Right. Okay, I have to ask you guys, I want to go overtime a little bit. You guys have some time. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Cool. Joe, you all right?
Yeah. If you need, I just want to hang out with these guys.
Right? Well, exactly. Okay. According to a study done by the University of Minnesota Extension, the Minnesota craft brewery industry was a $1 billion industry. It generated $1 billion in economic activity in 2019. And COVID hit. The industry does really seem to have retracted. Some estimates show that as much as 30%, many as 30% of the breweries in the state shut down. Both your businesses, Imminent Brewing and Loon Liquor, seem to have come out of the pandemic relatively unscathed. No one came out completely unscathed, but you guys come out relatively unscathed. Where did the pandemic hit you guys the hardest? And what did you do during that time that helped your companies survive? And do you see your industries bouncing back? I'm going to give you each about 5 minutes to answer that because I've got another question that I want to ask after we're done here.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So we, you know, basically for a while we were just shut down completely in the tap room, and that's our bread and butter. So, luckily, I think because of the culture we've built, we had just a ton of community support. And people came out of the woodwork to buy growlers and howlers to go. And that was amazing. You know, we offered discounts on them. We did special things for our mug club members. We did do a little bit of 750 milliliter bottles, kind of special bottles that we were able to sell. People bought gift cards and merchandise and just all kinds of cool things.
If I may interject one thing, people were dropping $100 bills into the tip jar.
Yeah, I mean, the support for our bartenders was so cool. It was really great. And I mean, we had government support too. That helped. I mean, like we need to acknowledge that, like, without the programs that were put in place, you know, I think there was a lot of not good users of the Paycheck Protection Program.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, you know, basically that allowed us to pay our employees to be there and do work for us. We, you know, we found projects for them. We made sure that they had a job. We didn't lose anybody, you know, throughout the whole pandemic. Laura and I took some time off and let our employees do stuff, and that was great. So, yeah, I mean, that's where we were hit hardest. And even when you're allowed to be back open, you know, there's limits on, you have to be at 50% capacity, that spacing between things. Yep. And it was a lot of work, a lot of cleaning again, which we were used to, but man, it was a lot of work. Yeah. So,
how about Loon?
Oh, man. Giving me chills here, you know, just like flashbacks, you know. I think it was the third week in March when March hit it.
March 20th. 2020.
There we go. Right, yeah.
The Benson Ramsey show.
Yeah.
That week was insane. So to put it in perspective, so at the beginning of that week, they announced that all the bars and restaurants are going to close, right? Everything's to go, right? At that moment, we only had a couple of employees, the famous, the notorious Abe Henson being one of them, you know, and Rachel Morrison, the whole crew. But we looked at cocktail kits to go, and then we focused on that, and that allowed us to run a skeleton crew with them. They did a fantastic job with that. But then when the pandemic hit that same week too, I was like, man, we need to protect our employees, right? Not knowing, you know, what exactly and how exactly to do that and all the guidance and this information, that information, whatever. I went out to Menards, Target, Cub, and a couple others, and I couldn't find any hand sanitizer, right? Between transactions, right?
Right.
And it was like, oh my God, right? And I was even looking online with many others. How do you make hand sanitizer at home, right? Some people were using, you know, Everclear and other things, right? And then mixing it with aloe vera, and there was like all these crazy recipes, right? And I came back to the distillery, and the still was still running, and I was up at like 90% alcohol, right? And then the CDC started saying it's going to, you know, above 70% will kill COVID and will kill all these other things, right? And it was like, okay, how do I do this? So I started calling up Minnesota Health Department, started calling up nationally, and looked at all these articles online that started popping up. Hey, distilleries are starting to get into the hand sanitizer stuff, right? But I said, you know, with Sim, you know, which Sim was just coming back from his honeymoon from Italy at this time, right? So he was on lockdown, right? Even though he wasn't showing his symptoms, we were just playing it super safe.
Italy of all places.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No, he's got stories.
Singing on the balcony.
Right. Yeah. So we started talking to each other, you know, on, hey, you know, we need to do this, but we're not going to rush into it in terms of, we're not going to do it without guidance from the Minnesota Health Department, period, right? End of story. Or FDA, for that matter. If the FDA came out, we are not a pharmaceutical company, okay? We have no experience doing this, right? But our town needs it, okay? We started getting calls from the hospital, from all the first responders, all the, you know, fire department, health department. Actually, the fire department learned of that we were starting to do hand sanitizer from this show, from KYMN. They actually were listening at the firehouse, and they were like, seriously, you got some, right? So look beyond the whole hand sanitizer going after COVID. Okay, hand sanitizer protects people out at the hospital from the everyday cold. There's also people that have infections that need to apply alcohol or hand sanitizer, you know, or sanitizer to their bodies for open wounds and other things. So there's much more need, you know, of this hand sanitizer than just people that just douse their Doritos bags from, you know, cup or something like that. And like, totally right. There was some of that, right? But anyways, so we, that same week, right, we've been, actually about the week before we started talking, you know, to, you know, national, trying to get some national deal. And then boom, the FDA put out a guide that basically they give to actually developing worlds of how to produce hand sanitizer from scratch. And so that was high proof alcohol mixed with I'm forgetting the recipe, but hydrogen peroxide and glycerol, which is what it's like, basically heavy water that allows, you know, your fingers not to crack, because there were some distilleries that were producing hand sanitizer during the pandemic and they weren't following any recipes. They weren't following any FDA guidance and they weren't putting any, you know, glycerol, anything into it. And it was cracking their hands and it was actually making their hands bleed. Okay. So we waited until then. Within 24 hours of the FDA putting out their guidance, we had our first batch of hand sanitizer. We put everything, all of our spirit, everything that we've created up until that point. Because, again, I was creating the first run and fermentation while Simeon was on honeymoon, waiting for him to come back, finish the spirit, as we always do. But then we looked at it and we were like, nah, like, you know, people need this more than us, you know, so people before profit. And that day, that very day, within 24 hours, we gave a bunch out to the hospital and they distributed all over, you know, all, I think they helped out like 12 different hospitals. At one point we were helping out Abbott Northwestern, all, you know, Allina Medical System, all the FedEx in the state, State Patrol from Blue Earth County down to Rochester. Cause we were the only ones in Southern Minnesota that can make it from scratch. Right. So many stories that go along with that, but that's long story amazing. Short, it was an insane, insane, like 4 months.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. If you actually go to our spot, we haven't been able to do this yet, but create a really cool display. But we started asking all the different first responders to give us a patch, you know, so they're like, hey, can we get some? It's like, absolutely. But if you have an extra patch, please bring it. So we have like, you know, a couple, you know, a dozen, couple dozen of all these different patches. And if you see that in our spot, we haven't put up any information. That's They're just kind of sitting there, you know, but that's what that is. We got actually a challenge coin from the Northfield Hospital for doing it, which was like absolutely one of the best, you know, feelings in the world to help them out. So that was the beginning of our pandemic. And then it was just, you know, liquor stores are going nuts, heavy on distribution. And yeah, like, you know, probably Derek and, you know, the whole team is like, how do you create the most safe environment for your employees? How do you create the most safe environment for your customers? How do you avoid, you know, all these different things? We could probably have an entire, like, two shows on the pandemic. Yeah, but we probably
ought to at some point.
No doubt.
Right, Derek, I'm going to direct this question to you because, Mark, I've got another question I want to come back to you on. And I know that Loon's not super interested in making THC-infused products. However, state of Minnesota has legalized Delta-9 THC, and, you know, by all indication, the majority in the legislature right now is going to try very hard to legalize marijuana in the state of Minnesota, which will open up a lot of doors for new products, including THC-infused beverages.
Right.
Is that something that interests Imminent Brewing?
Potentially. I mean, it's a funny product. And it's especially funny because, like, right now there's no clarity about what you can and can't do. I do know that, like, in Northfield, the way the license is set up, it would be for off-site consumption only. So, again, because we're not canning anything, probably not going to do this, right? It would potentially make sense to us to offer that product just as another option for people that don't want to have a beer if they could do it on-site, if they could come and have a THC beverage on-site in a responsible, safe environment. We're watching it and monitoring it. That might make some sense for us. And apparently there are places where the license is a little different where that's happening, or like At least they think the license is different. We don't know. Yeah, we don't know what's going on.
Right.
So some clarity around this law will be helpful, and hopefully that happens this session.
The bill that's in, at least in the House right now, is 125 pages long, which will be a lot clearer than the three paragraphs that passed.
I'll just hammer on this point one more time, though. It's kind of crazy to me that there are places in Minnesota right now where you can have a beer and a THC beverage, mm-hmm. but you cannot get a beer or a glass of wine.
Yep.
That's just like
so
weird. Yes. So bass ackwards, I will say. Yeah. I think that's allowed on
it
the
is.
Radio.
Well, okay. I'm not supposed to agree with you, but yeah. No, okay. Yeah. All right. Mark.
Yeah.
When I was a bartender at Eminent Brewing, people would come in and ask me, hey, how do I get to Loon Liquors? And we eventually had a little map that we would hand people because I would tell people, you will absolutely believe you are in the wrong spot until you walk into the cocktail room. And it's because you're in a very industrialized warehouse area on a different side of the city. Yeah. There is a plan afoot. You've been public about this. Mm-hmm. You want to buy the Northfield's historic post office right on Bridge Square, which is it's smack dab in the center of town. It's like sort of a cornerstone of downtown Northfield. That's a process for you. So please, and there are rumors running rampant out there that the city of Northfield wants to tear the post office down and that you guys want to buy and tear it down and build something. Can you please just address this whole situation?
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity here. Yes, Simi and I are absolutely interested in putting a deal on the table to acquire the Northfield post office downtown. Mm-hmm. As many folks know, it has been on the market about 10 years ago, roughly. It was put on the National Registry of Historic Places, right? And the fact that it is on that list is actually a super big asset, right? So you can't change the facade much at all. You need to keep the windows original. I mean, all these other things that are super restrictive for some businesses are actually a very big asset for us. We think it's one of the coolest spots. You know, we've looked at expanding our business for the last couple of years in different spaces, different towns, different areas of Northfield. And this spot just keeps coming back up because, after all, at some point, USPS is going to probably put it back on the market because if you look inside, they're only using a couple hundred square feet as compared to, 6,500 square feet of available space, right? They've, made it known that... when they put out the press release and everything else during that sale time that they would save, I think it was about $70,000 a year or something right around there by moving their operation, by consolidating it, mm-hmm. Or moving it, right? You look at different USPS spots and different, it's pretty, they've stated before, it's pretty much all they need, right? So if they don't need that building, somebody is going to, go in there. And actually, Derek toured it way back before, you guys are kind of getting on. So we've been looking at it. We don't know if we're going to be maintaining some of our space within our current building because actually the post office is very big compared to where we're at, but it's actually potentially not that big. There are still some potential warehousing, bottling, mm-hmm. other things that we're looking at, but to give you a little touch of the vision, and again, I'm really looking forward to developing this conversation with you folks and with the community, with Simeon right here, definitely it's a shared vision of what that looks like, but at a super high level, from what some folks may have seen on city council agenda, what we're looking at is a destination distillery that is focused on tourism. So it's focused on going in and experiencing local agriculture, how we work with local farmers, and getting that full experience with much larger equipment, with a food option And still maintaining to do cocktails. But if you look at, you know, these different destination distilleries in the Midwest, Tattersall and River Falls, that I was kind of, you know, throwing out there, Cedar Ridge, Iowa, or Cedar Ridge Distillery out in Iowa. There are others that are such an asset for that community, and the visitors that they come in are folks that want to experience something at a very high level, or at a very high hospitality experience, and they come in hopefully with a, you know, if they're willing to pay, you know, $100, a couple hundred dollars for a bottle of the highest end stuff, right? They're going to hopefully come into town, stay the night, go over to a bunch of different, that's what's really cool about the post office spot is that, you know, again, the plans for Bridge Square have been known. They're looking to remove that parking, okay? They're looking to remove that parking right out in front of it. Right. So it's a less ideal location for USPS for sure. But then also, if we're driving traffic in and around that area of people walking in, then they're going to walk back out. And, oh, man, hey, they got an ice cream spot over here. Hey, I'm going to grab a cup of coffee. I'm going to let's go shop around for a little bit. Oh, you know, my wife really wants to try the whiskey, but I don't really try the whiskey. I'm going to stop in at the Northfield Historical Society and the Olive Oil Store and all the other places. And these destination distilleries have been a huge asset for the communities, and we hope that we can put something on the table to benefit everybody in our community.
Putting you on the spot, are you being recruited by other municipalities, other communities?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Lilydale was the first. They said, here's a, I think it was a 10,000, 15,000 square foot building for free, plus the land, basically right on the river. So that was the first spot. Red Wing has reached out. There have been a couple of other communities that look at how they drive tourism, right? If you are a community, typically you want some type of tourism, economic activity to revitalize your downtown area, so that you have people moving in and out. And people are these communities are looking at distilleries, mostly, as kind of the next wave of, you know, more and more businesses that they're, you know, they know that they spend a ton of money on local agriculture, but also they can get something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, again, typically the price point's a bit higher, you know, on some of that. So yeah, a bunch of communities have reached out. Also, we're working with one of the incentives person that helped relocate Tattersall from Minneapolis to River Falls. And he has been a fantastic advisor just about how we frame the discussion. But altogether, you know, plan A, you know, is downtown. And I got to give a huge shout out to Ben Martig, Nate Carlson, Jake Riley, you know, Michaela,
people with, like, the city of Northfield.
Yeah, absolutely. Reve. I mean, so many people at the city want to keep us here, you know, but as, you know, a business owner, you got to look at all the options on the table, right? And you got to see what's really good for, you know, the business at the end of the day. And, but I'm glad to report that the city of Northfield has been super supportive of it. Rhonda's shown support. You know, again, Ben, you know, you may have heard from the city council meeting, it went very positive. You know, there have been discussions kind of around, you know, town, and okay, is this could be a good thing, bad thing, whatever. I think the vast majority of people are super supportive of this idea, and the amount of love that we've gotten from Northfield for looking at this opportunity has been just massive. So you got to take everything in, right? You got to take it all in. We got a lot of local love here. So, you know, hopefully we can work through things and make it look good. But yeah, and in the meantime, you know, we got to throw other different options. And again, yeah, you move, so many distilleries have moved across the border, and breweries for that matter too. Liftbridge, yeah, you know, heading out, you know, to Wisconsin.
I didn't realize that Liftbridge had gone to Wisconsin.
They still got a spot in Stillwater.
Yeah.
But where did they go? New Richmond?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, right next to 45th Parallel. Yeah. Yeah, Spirits. So, yeah, there. And when you're looking at it as a business owner, it's like, yeah, we got super restrictive policies, you know, in place that make it so much more desirable to go across the river, you know? But again, hopefully we can look at deals that, that bring everything all into it, you know, and grants and loans and all these other things, you know. We're 50-50 owners still. Sabine and I own 100% of the business, and we want to keep it that way. And, you know, Community Resource Bank has been a great partner, and hopefully we can get everything through it. But, yeah, it's a super exciting opportunity.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Has anyone reached out to Imminent Brewing as far as expansion offers and things like that go? You can talk about? I am totally putting you on the spot, by the way.
No, I would say no, not at all. I remember I got a flyer in the mail once from a real estate company. It was like, hey, this brewery is for sale. Does anybody want it? And I was like, probably went out to every brewery in the state. So, no. The answer's no.
Good. That's good news.
Yeah.
Derek, we'd like to give our guests the last word on our program. What are some conclusionary thoughts? What did we miss? Tell us any goals you have this year for
Imminent. Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess just kind of to wrap things up, I think what we've been talking about is, you know, making policy that is supporting these local businesses and makes sense. You know, let's allow these places to sell other products that would help them. Let's allow these places to sell amounts of products out of their door for people to take home and share with their family and friends, and make, you know, folks outside of the area aware of what's happening in Northfield so more people want to come here. Let's get rid of those limits. Let's make it a warm, welcoming spot for everyone so that these businesses can thrive, because they're truly part of our community. Was there another question to that? That was my concluding thought.
Well, I was
trying to
tell everybody again where you're at.
Yeah, we're down at right on the corner of Division Street and 6th Street. Just kind of go around 6th Street, right across from Family Fair Grocery there. It's 519 Division is our address.
Which confuses the heck out of people.
Yeah, but the entrance is off of 6th Street. Yeah, so just go around the corner. Big garage doors. We're in the garage of the old National Guard Armory. So, and our website is www.imminentbrewing.com. You can find any information you need there. So,
Mark, same thing. Conclusionary thoughts and tell us where you're at.
Yeah. So altogether in policy, if you look back since 2011, some of the best hard data that's out there is from the state auditor that audits municipal liquor stores. And if you look back since 2011, you know, on some of the arguments that went back, you know, on you know, why we shouldn't allow small businesses to grow, look at that data, because that data shows that retailers are doing great, and they're doing even more and more and more great. Mm-hmm. You know, the you know, it's happy to see that, you know, on the on-site, on the restaurants and bars, they're bouncing back too from COVID. Mm-hmm. So people are really starting to succeed. And what happens when you loosen policy for the smaller producers is that they move with the consumer towards the higher priced, higher quality, more local, you know, products. And at the end of the day, hopefully, everybody would admit that's where they want policy to go, right? Is that you're pushing everybody more towards the higher quality, less quantity, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. when it comes to alcohol, you know, aspects. And the data shows that that's where the market goes when you help these small businesses. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we're going to see more of that, you know, progress. And then again, just last word, like, appreciate you folks so much for sharing all the information out on your programs. KYMN1 being just great partners with the community. And hopefully here we're going to get some updates in the next couple of months, and would love to have my business partner Simeon just sit right here with you folks and chat about all of the fun things that we're doing, because the post office is one thing, but the peated whiskey is another. There's a bunch the new rye whiskey. I mean, there's so many fun things that I really want to share with you, but really that needs to come from Simeon, because he's the pal of the team here. But again, appreciate you folks, and yeah, love Northfield for sure.
This has been another great and interesting conversation. We got to wrap it up, so we'll end the program here. Derek Myers of Imminent Brewing and Mark Schiller of Loon Liquors, thank you for the conversation and insights this morning. That concludes this week's edition of Public Policy This Week. We're on KYMN Radio, AM 1080 and FM 95.1 each Friday morning from 10 to 11. I'm Joe Moravchik, my co-host, Rich Larson. Don't forget to join us next week when Dr. Michael Osterholm joins us to provide an update on COVID. The objective for Public Policy This Week is to inspire important, meaningful, in-depth conversations about public policy challenges and opportunities, staying away from the high-volume rhetoric that is so commonplace today.
So, yeah, thank you all for joining us. Mark Schiller, thank you. Derek Myers, thank you.
Thanks for having us. It's really
Joe Moravchik, thank you, my friend. And thanks for sticking with us and letting us go overtime on this show. This was a fascinating conversation. I think we'd probably go another hour. But anyway, folks, thank you all for joining Public Policy This Week. We will be here again next Friday morning at 10 a.m. Have a fantastic Friday afternoon and a superb weekend. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Public Policy This Week. Tune in every Friday morning at 10 a.m. for more conversation with policy experts. Remember, this show can be found on your favorite podcast platform or stream it from kymnradio.net.